Hare Krishna. There it is. Okay, text 51 on page 94. Agnir mahi gaganam ambyu maru jajishta kalasya tatma manasiti jagatrayani yasma bhavanti bivavanti vishantiyam cha govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. The three worlds are composed of the nine elements: fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul, and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, and whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of the universal cataclysm. Purport. There is nothing in the three worlds save the five elements, ten quarters, time, jiva soul, and the mental principle allied with the subtle body, consisting of mind, intelligence, and ego of the conditioned souls. The elevationists, the karmis, make their offering in sacrifice in the fire. Conditioned souls know nothing beyond this perceptible world of nine elements. The jiva is the same self-same soul whose ecstatic delight the joyless liberationists, gyanis, aspire after. I'm going to read that again. The jiva is the same self, the self-same soul whose ecstatic delight the joyless liberationists, gyanis, aspire after. Both the principles that are respectively depicted as Atma and Prakriti by the system of Shankhya are included in the above. In other words, all the principles that have been enunciated by all the speculative philosophers, tattvavadis, are included in these nine elements. Sri Govinda is the source of the appearance, continuance, and substance of all these principles. Wow. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada, he mentions the karmis, the gyanis, the Shankhya philosophers, or the tattvavadis. So this verse is very similar to this couple of verses in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We can look at, well, maybe we don't have them here. The Bhagavad Gita 4:7-4, and you have that there? You have that? Okay. I don't have it here. But 7:4, it's Bhumir apanalo vayu kam munir vireva cha aham karayiti ame bina pakritirashtara. And then the next verse, apure yamitastuanyam pakritim vinimepuram jiva bhuta mahabaho yadejdam dayatejagat. Thank you. 89. So Krishna, he says, go ahead and read there, Chandra. So there's eight material energies. Then the next one.
Besides this, O mighty Amdarjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature.
So that about covers everything in this world. Now, sometimes the Shankarites, they divide it, and in the Bhagavatam also, we'll see the material elements are divided sometimes into 16 or 18, and then sometimes into 24, 25. So we'll have the sense objects and then the senses, and also divided. But Krishna simply, easily, perceivably divides it into earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then the living entity as being separate and different than that. Although the living entity is also considered Prakriti, because he's an expansion, he's an energy of the Lord, he's not the Purusha. So the Purusha is the source, and the Prakriti is the energy of that source. So dominated energy, controlled energy. So Krishna says here that in the 7.5, he says that this, although this, the jiva is my energy, it's a superior energy, and dull matter is considered inferior because it's not conscious. And of course the human being is the marginal energy, but compared to other entities like the animals and the birds and the beasts and the trees, the human is actually aware of his existence. You know, we're aware that we exist. So the human being, you know, potentially the jiva can fully manifest its awareness in the human form. Prabhupada talks about that in the Isha Upanishad in the first. In the invocation, he says that everything that is comes from the complete is also complete in itself. So he says that the human form of life is the complete manifestation of completeness, because the human being can be aware of itself fully, so jiva can manifest. So then Krishna says in the 10th chapter, I think it's 10:8. He says, Aham sarvasya pravavam matasarvam pavartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samam vitaha. I am the source of the spiritual and the material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly, engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So there, Krishna, he's the Purusha, because he's the source of the spiritual and the material worlds. So going back to this verse in purport, there is nothing in the three worlds save these five elements. The ten quarters, the time, jiva soul, the mental principle, the subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence, ego, of the conditioned souls. So he calls the karmis elevationists. Elevation, when you hear that word, what do you think of? Somebody's climbing up the hill, right? Under their own power. So, the bhaktas are not elevationists. They're depending on the Lord for whatever progress they make. But the karmis are thinking, by my arrangements, I can make advancement. And they do the fire yajnas. And the conditioned souls know nothing beyond the perceptible world of the nine elements. So the conditioned soul, just the word conditioned means that he's mixed, his consciousness is mixed with the mind and the nine elements. Right? The mind basically is the intelligence and the false ego and then the mind itself. So the mind is a perceptual mechanism. Right? Because you have information coming in through the senses. And what does the mind do with that information? Right? We perceive things with sight. What are the senses? There's five senses.
Touch, eye, tongue, nose, ear.
Right. And then the mind is considered the sixth sense. So what does the mind do with that information?
It has two parts. One is intelligence and one who makes the desire. So the desire part tells you, okay, I want this. Intelligence will say, okay, you can have it, or you can say, no, no, you can't. Hmm. So it's up to the intelligence to decide whether... It depends. Sometimes desire is so powerful that it overcomes intelligence. Or sometimes, you know, I have to go to the work, it doesn't matter. I don't want to go, but still. So it's...
Yes. So in within the mind are desires, and the intelligence tries to figure out how to get those desires, how to get what we want, how to avoid what we don't want. And then the false ego is that force where we identify with those desires, right? Where the soul identifies with those desires. So those desires are due to thoughts. I mean, you can trace a desire back to a thought. So the mind, what the mind does is when we hear something, when we see something, the mind makes a picture of it. Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. And those become like a movie, right? And so Krishna says, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment, right? So the information comes into the senses. There's a picture made of it. This is called an internal representation, because it's not real, right? So whatever we see in our mind is a reflection of what was perceived. It's just a picture. And we make certain pictures. And that's called the internal map, you know, of reality. So we all have our own maps of reality that we've made through this life and many lifetimes. But have you ever heard the saying that the map is not the territory? Well, just like, you know, you can get a map of San Jose, right? Yeah. And it's not actually San Jose. It's just a picture of it. And if you look at that map, you won't see everything in San Jose on that map, will you? You'll just see certain streets, right? And you'll see certain lines, and you'll see certain things that are, you know, maybe the university's there. But everything, not every church, not every house is not going to be put on that map. The only thing that's going to be put on that map is whatever the map maker puts on it, whatever he decides is important. And so within our mind, we have our own internal map, and the only thing that's in there is what we've decided is important. So according to whatever we believe, according to our conditioning as we were young, we've made a particular map of, you know, particularly we make a map of what we think is dangerous, you know, and how will we avoid danger? You know, so it kind of depends on the culture that we grew up in, what will be on that map. If you grew up like in an alcoholic family where your father was a violent person when he got drunk, you know, you might be very intimidated by authority figures, right? So you, in your map, you'll be thinking of how to avoid that kind of danger. You know? So you might be very meek around people with authority, or, you know, so many things. Maybe if you grew up in a very balanced family, you know, you might have a map of yourself as being a very confident person, you know, and you feel comfortable in social situations. So anyway, we have all these pictures within our mind, and that's what we're perceiving. So it says here that the conditioned soul, he doesn't see anything beyond what's beyond the nine elements, because he's always looking out through the senses. And whatever he sees in the mind, he thinks that's me. And he never sees himself or the Supreme Lord. And then, you know, the karmis are mentioned here, the gyanis are mentioned here. What is Shankya? What is the system of Shankya? Do you know? Yeah, the analytical study of what's observable. So you could say that the material scientists are Shankya because they try and analyze everything. But also it's a process of self-realization. And it's called, you could say, it's called 1990 or 1880, which I'm not this, I'm not that. The process of elimination. And we do that to a certain degree, even in bhakti yoga. You know, that we, by process of elimination, we can see, I'm not this, I'm not that. I'm not the mind, I'm not the body. And what's left? Pure consciousness. So we can go with inside, we can turn our attention within, and we can observe the mind, the thoughts, the sensations. And behind that space is us. It's pure consciousness. We're the perceiver, we're the knower. You know, when we chant the mantra, we're the knower of the mantra. We're the perceiver of the mantra. And we can cultivate that kind of consciousness. We should cultivate that consciousness. But there's a limit to that. You know, it's not that we can know Krishna that way. But we can know ourself to a certain degree. But our real self is eternal servant of Krishna. And that realization will descend to us when Krishna is pleased. But that system of I'm not this, I'm not that is useful up to a certain point, and we do need to practice that, you know, to help de-identify with the mind and the body. So this verse is mentioning how everything basically comes from Krishna, comes from Govinda. And it's very similar to the seventh chapter of verse 4 and 5 of Bhagavad Gita, explaining all the different elements. You know, the spiritual and the material come from Govinda. But only the bhakti yogis, can realize this completely. So next we'll read 52. Any comments or questions?
Probably a question, just a technical question. I'm confused, is mind material or what is the relation of mind with the soul? People say after you die, the impressions are on the mind, which are very, you know, strong. They are sometimes carried forward in your next life.
Yeah.
So, but I thought mind is material, the soul goes.
Well, the subtle body travels with the soul and continues to cover it. Yeah. And so, and the mind is really it has no consciousness itself. You know, just like a television or a computer is just it's the hard drive, you know. The hardware. And without the electricity, it doesn't run. But once the electricity is in there, the consciousness is in there, then it functions. And so it's a storehouse. It's the mind is the software and the hardware. And it saves information on the hard drive, right? And keeps that information. And then accesses that information. You know, even in our mind, you know, it's like if you see a door there, the first time you saw a door when you were a child and you learned the word door, your mind made a picture of that, and every time you see a door, you actually access that information in your mind, just like a computer. It's there, but it's just going on automatically, you know, unconsciously. Everything has been, you know, computed, pictured and sorted and put in a particular place. Just like when you when you close your eyes, you see sometimes people, sometimes when they're trying to remember something, they kind of, their eyes move up into a certain area in their head. They're actually going to a particular place in their brain where that information is accessible.
The picture comes sometimes first and name comes later. Like sometimes you remember someone, the picture has come, but the name is still missing.
Now, if you close your eyes, you'll actually know in what direction you're keeping that. If it's something you don't like, it will be in a different area than what you do like. And so, it's very much sorted according to like, dislike. And some people are more visual when they make pictures. It's like I said, our mind makes pictures. It's not only visual pictures. We make pictures of sound. We make pictures of smell. We make pictures of taste. And we make pictures of inner dialogue that's called audio-digital. Auditory-digital, or that's internal dialogue. Do you have an internal dialogue going on? Do you, John? What are some of the things... What's some of the dialogue that goes on in there? Is it pretty loud?
No.
Some people are more visual, and then some people are more according to feeling. You know, that's how they perceive the world. So. Each person, some of these, usually taste and smell aren't so strong, but audio, digital, and just auditory and sight. Some people, we tend to favor one over the other.
Well, just with that, I think a lot of the times the different senses will be having different effect on things. Like taste and smell, I think, give you more of the feeling, whereas like visual.
You better start using the microphone. Huh?
Well, just that when you hear and you see, I think it makes more of an imprint on that. Like you're saying, making the picture, and whereas the feel, the smell, and taste make more of a feeling imprint. Like when we have a smell that brings back memories, it's mm-hmm. more of feeling,
yeah.
And takes back the time where we felt at that time. Whereas when we drive, we see these landmarks and we can just go without thinking.
Yeah, that's always going on. The only point I'm making is that with each, according to the individual, sometimes one sense is more dominant than the others, especially when it comes to learning or memorizing things. Sometimes people memorize things more by sight than they do by hearing. Other people, they learn more by hearing than by sight. Just like in a learning, when you're learning a language, generally what language is taught is very much very visual. But those persons that aren't very visual, who learn more by hearing, sometimes don't learn so well. And like when you're trying to memorize a sloka, you know, do you see it in your mind, or do you hear it? How about you, Chanya?
I see it.
You see it, so you'd be more visual.
I feel it.
You feel it.
Feel it in a sense, it feels correct, everything fits in order, and you feel it.
Yeah, kind of like a baseball player swinging a bat, hitting a ball, it's by the feeling. Yeah. Now for me, I have to remember things in sequence, right? So that person is more what they call auditory digital. You know? So I tend to remember things in sequence. You know? And if I lose a sequence, then I can't remember what it was. But that's just, so the mind is just matter. It's just a perceptual mechanism. It's the soul who's perceiving all of these things.
Prabhuji, when we say jiva, that itself includes subtle body, right? Because Atma and Jiva, the difference between that is that Atma with subtle body becomes Jiva.
No, not in line according to our definition, Krishna's definition. Jiva is the soul. And of course, in Sanskrit, Atma can mean soul or mind or, you know, heart, like that. And even in English and in Japanese too, it's kind of like that. The one word can be used in different ways according to the context. It can mean soul or mind or the spirit, you know. The spirit of the meaning of the, you know. And the spirit in English can mean the soul, or in context it can just mean how you feel about something.
Soul doesn't exist without body. Soul has to have a body, like second body or some kind of...
The soul has a spiritual body. Yeah. That is unmanifest. And the soul is always a part, in infinite. Even though the soul is one, it's part, right? So that's why Krishna explains that in verse 5, 7-5, how the soul is. He also says in the ninth chapter, "Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasastani indriyani prakritirstani karshati." It's only the Vaishnava Sampradayas that explain this, though. You know, if you're trying to understand the soul through Patanjali or from Shankara, they don't make this distinction that the soul is an eternal part, is simultaneously one and different. So then you get into these different, how does the soul, you know, how does the one soul become infinitesimal in this world? And they have different ways of explaining that through these terms.
So adding to this question, so when we die, that time soul leaves the body.
Yeah.
But it leaves the physical body and the subtle body moves along.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So it's not the entire body, right?
No. Just the subtle body always is there. And as long as the soul continues to identify with it and create it. So as we're continually, we keep it going, you know, by keeping our attention, our identification with the mind and what it's, you know, showing. We keep giving energy to it so it continues. So as long as we identify with the mind and its desires, then we perpetuate it. And that will lead us from one body to the next. So once we realize that we're not the mind, we're not the body, then we can just utilize it, you know, for Krishna in this world. And it doesn't hold us here.
Prabhuji, this subtle body is Maya, it's material. It's not...
It's not spiritual, yeah.
The soul is always conditioned, yeah. Even if it leaves the body, it's always conditioned.
Yeah. And the way to distinguish between the mind and the body and the soul is like Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says, Nasato vijite bhavo, na bhavo vijite sataha, ubayapi jistam tas toyanu yos tat vidarshibi. The nature of spirit is it doesn't change, it's constant. The pure consciousness, and we are that pure consciousness, and it's always there in the background. It's what's perceiving, and that never changes. But the mind is always changing, the body is always changing. So that's how we distinguish between what is matter and what is spirit. And we can perceive that as we make advancement in spiritual life. We begin to sense that, we begin to see that we are the seer. We're not what is being seen. We're separate from that. And that's always constant. It doesn't change. And so, yeah.
Guruji, I just got a phone. I just got a phone call that Yamuna Mataji, who is Vaishnava Prabhu's mother, she passed away this morning.
Wow.
And Nirupala Mataji wanted more kirtan in her honor.
John. Did they say what time?
I do not think so.
Well, that's amazing. Jai Jamuna. So, probably some of you don't know what's been going on, so I'll just explain it to you. And then later, when more devotees come, we'll have more Sankirtan. But Vaisheshika's mother, she was 92 years old. A couple of months ago, actually, you know, Vaishya's father died last year of Alzheimer's, or complications, really. And he was a little bit older, I think. Maybe he was 93 or 94. So his mother, up until last year, up until his father's passing away, was very, very active. She only retired a couple of years ago. She was a professor at one of the universities. And very sharp lady, very together, a real doer, just like Vaish. And within the last couple of months, her energy was going down, she was getting a little depressed. She went to see a psychologist, and he advised her to start meditating. Right? So then she asked Vaisheshika about meditation and his meditation. And he taught her how to chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and he gave her a set of beads. He chanted on those beads, and he gave her a spiritual name, Jamuna. And she began to identify with that name and started chanting Hare Krishna. Her whole life she was an agnostic, meaning she didn't really believe in spirit or God. But she started to change. And then she started to chant. And then over the last couple of months, her energy got weaker, and she just decided she didn't want to stay in this world anymore, basically. And she did. As far as I could hear, there was no physiological pathology, you know, any disease process that was going on. She was just getting weaker and weaker. She would go to Kaiser. They didn't really find anything. They thought maybe something was wrong with her thyroid, and they gave her some thyroid medication. But especially over this last month, the weakness increased. She was kind of going out of the hospital, and finally she said, I'm going home. And she stopped drinking or eating food about 5 days ago. And I talked to Vaish yesterday, actually, and she was still had quite a bit of energy, and she was very fully conscious. She decided to leave this world. She was calling herself Jamuna, chanting. Vaish had put Shaligram Srila above her head. He had been staying in the room with her 24 hours a day, just chanting japa. And tons of friends were coming by to see her and say goodbye. Nirkula's been over there. Sangeeta, she's a hospice nurse devotee who she's founded on Vaishnav care, and she's helped devotees set up devotee hospice all over the world, especially in Vrindavan. So she flew in 2 days ago. And then they also had a crew of hospice nurses that were there, you know, turning and moving her body. Jamuna was in a little bit of pain due to just being in the same position. Like if you lay on your bed, you know, for 12 hours, your back will start aching. So there's a way of moving, you know, moving the body. So they were moving her body, and I guess she passed sometime last night or this morning. And I talked to Vaish yesterday afternoon, and she was very fully conscious. So
she had stopped eating and drinking water, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. She was going to.
Yeah, so, and the doctor told her, you know, if you don't drink water, you'll probably pass within about 5 days. And it's been about 5 days. And so Vaish said that he's learned an incredible amount from his mother. And he's very inspired by, you know, the determination she made to chant and to just go back to Godhead. She told Sangeeta yesterday, she goes, I don't want to come back and do this again. So it's amazing, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, particularly Vaisheshika, how she could get this awakening and perfect herself at the end. It's just quite very amazing. And for me, it's really, of course, I wasn't there, but I've seen so many people leave their bodies, you know, usually due to illness, either to trauma or to illness. And it's usually quite a struggle. You know. In most cases, the person's lungs fill up with fluid, and they're, you know, when you're not getting oxygen, you begin to panic, and it's very uncomfortable. And then gradually you go into unconsciousness and then you die. But that panic stage is really uncomfortable. Devotees are, you know, hospice devotees, they give a little morphine to take the edge off, which is really helpful, especially if there's a lot of pain. But to just fast, basically Prabhupada did this too. He fasted and then he didn't drink water. You know, he resolved, I'm leaving, and he didn't drink water. And then when he stopped drinking water, when you stop drinking water, you know, you generally only last, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 days, depending on your condition and what the atmosphere is, you know, what the humidity is like and the heat and everything. But you go really consciously without a lot of pain or struggle. You know, like Maharaj Prakrit, you know, he fasted until death. No water, no. It's a good way to go. If you can, and it's, you know, it's the right time. So when we chant today, let's think of Jamuna and send our blessings and send our goodwill to Vaish and his family. Thanks. So we just read Brahma Samhita, and we read text 51. Now we'll do some chanting.